This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with my co-pilot Kyle, and today we're going to be talking part 9 finale of the Apple TV Plus limited series Masters of the Air. As always, if you want to check us out a little bit more, see some of the other shows that we cover, you can find that over on bingetowntv.com. if you are listening on our Masters of the Air feed, go on over to the Bingetown TV main feed, and there you can pretty much follow along no matter what show we are covering. What we are covering right now is Shogun over on FX. As I'm getting a notification here, we just wrapped Avatar The Last Airbender live action on Netflix, and we have a couple other ones coming up. I just saw Fallout is coming out in April, and then June is going to be a heavy hitting month for us, so we are going to be covering shows all the while. And once again, you can find that all on bingetowntv.com. but let's get into it. Part 9, a fitting finale, I think, for this show, Masters of the Air. I think my gripes, it was getting a little bit slower the past two, maybe three episodes even, but I think episode 9 just felt good. It was a satisfying conclusion to all of the storylines that were ongoing. Yeah, I think it was just also a return to the intensity that was captured in some of those earlier sequences in the earlier episodes of the season. But yeah, I really liked this finale.
Yeah, I don't think I could have asked for much more. Felt like it had everything I could have hoped for. It was emotional. It was adrenaline inducing. It was harrowing. It was, you know, made me think. It was kind of literally every note you could probably try to hit in a World War II historical style show finale like this. So I don't think I have a single complaint.
Yeah, I would agree. And we do kind of have our three storylines going on here. It is Rosie who gets shot down on a bombing mission over Berlin, and then how he's kind of finds his way back to Thorpe Abbott and the Allies via the Russians. And then we have our Stalag storyline that obviously kind of crescendos the marches, et cetera, and how Buck and Bucky get out of there. And then we have some oddly out of place Kroz scenes maybe in the beginning there, where he's just a little hot-headed at Thorpe Abbott. But then this episode kind of culminates in all of our heroes being reunited. I'm not sure if this actually happened, some of these things, but it was a lot of fan service in the end, and they left it on a very positive note this series. So why don't we get into it with this Rosie storyline? And I think this sequence in the beginning before the credits really captured the intensity that I've been craving the past couple episodes. How about you?
Yeah, I was happy to be back in the air. This probably sounds weird to say, but yeah, in the air with the flak, the boys in the back on the guns, in terms of, okay, the finale's giving us this again, was a good thing to see.
The flak and the boys in the back?
Yeah.
You know, this also might have been the coolest bombs away sequence, because it literally like drops the camera. You can hear like the whistling of the bombs. It was just really cool. But again, takes us back to the early episodes. Two engines on fire. This thing's going down. We see everybody shoot out, and then Rosie has to shoot out. really cool how him and his co-pilot are going back and forth. He refuses to go down in Berlin. He's like, I can get it across the river. We're going to get captured by the Russians, if anything. And sure enough, that plays out. And really this intense sequence when he's on the ground, clearly injured, and he sees the Russians just shooting at surrendering German forces. Who knows what's going through their heads? And almost a laughable moment in a weird way as he tries to identify himself.
Apparently that is how he did it too in real life, which is really funny. I mean, at that time, I'm trying to think of what a better things to say that would signal you as an American, and Coca-Cola feels like a pretty good one.
Roosevelt, Coca-Cola, Amerikansky, I believe. So yeah, it does the trick. I don't know. And we see that again, kind of when Buck has to identify himself to even the American soldiers. It's like these people were probably trigger happy at this point in the war and just shooting without much discretion. So I couldn't imagine being in Rosie's situation there.
Yeah, but I was like, I don't want to say gladdened, but when he mentions, like, if I can just get us far enough away, like, we'll be at, like, where the Russian army is. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's a good goal. Like, we're not just dropping in a field.
Oh, it's over the river, yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of
the Oder River.
German terror. Like, we have been basically almost every episode before this, so I just, like,
yeah,
makes sense, but I felt safer.
Well, anyway, he is successfully retrieved by the Russian soldiers, and the next time we catch up with Rosie is him sharing a Jeep with a Russian officer and his translator. This guy was kind of a riot, if I'm being honest. His translator was kind of funny too, but he hands him a handkerchief for the smell, says, you know, it's not going to be an easy journey back, whatever, to get you back to the Americans. But this is where we kind of have this aside where Rosie goes off and kind of explores the Zabikowo camp. And I don't know, that's just the first time the series really just put the camera right on it. Huddled dead bodies of presumably Jewish people. And then the translator kind of comes up and says, we found many of these camps, larger camps. They were essentially just built with the intention of killing Poles, Russians, and most of them were Jews. So,
yeah, it's pretty crazy to, I don't know if it really travels into the realm of like desensitized, but like we hear like concentration camps, and you know, we learned about it in school, and you and I actually visited one when we were in Germany, and that was a really wild experience.
Yeah,
but actually being there and witnessing it firsthand, and I don't know how much they knew about it in the war, like leading up to that. He seemed really taken aback and surprised by it. So I just, all of it combined, it was just so many things going through my head, like watching this happen. It was just like unbelievable to think about. And just him, especially, there's no one he knows around him. Like, it's not like you can lean on a friend's shoulder while you're, you know, realizing all this and letting this just absolute devastation and depravity wash over you. It was just like, holy shit, this is intense.
And that kind of emphasized the magnitude of it through the translator, who, like you said, almost seems desensitized to it. He says, yeah, this is like, we've hit several of them. This isn't even the biggest one. You know, the Russian officer just casually handing him a handkerchief saying, oh, this is for the smell. And this scene right here ties into the later conversation when Kroz and Rosie are finally reunited, where Rosie just tells him, they had it coming. And like you said, you're not sure how much the soldiers we've seen have been exposed to it. Rosie is the first one we've seen that directly has contact with this sort of horror. And he is the one that can pass on to a conflicted Kroz, you know, we did what we had to do. We had to fight the monsters, and they had it coming. So
yeah,
another powerful scene.
Yeah. And Rosie's been like that too throughout the whole time, even without having this, you know, firsthand experience here. And yeah, I would assume if you had any level of doubt after, you know, however many years you were involved in the war, if you saw something like that, obviously it would change you like the war has changed you, but
I don't even want to say you would be easier on yourself. It just like what a revelation it would be for your psyche.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, kind of the same lesson is reinforced when further along they get to the Russian airbase. He's finally on his way, but he strikes up the conversation with the Yiddish man, or the man who was speaking Yiddish. And he asks, hey, are you going home to see your family?
Yeah.
And the guy just,
yeah.
And the guy just shares his harrowing tale. He buried his family back home. He's an old man, his daughter, his granddaughter, his wife. He buried them along with his friends. And, you know, his God has forsaken him and all that. And that's just, I don't know. I guess it's just an emphasis even for the soldiers who have seen that side of the horrors of the war. The everyday citizen who maybe wasn't even fighting and just had the war thrust upon him and his whole life upheaved. I don't know. It's just terrible. And this goes back to why this is such a good finale, that they're still punching with those emotional haymakers, if you will. I don't know. It was a very powerful couple of scenes for Rosie.
Yeah, it was so interesting to see this character that we've followed go through all of these terrifying experiences and put his life like repeatedly on the line, and him feel, I don't even want to say like a fish out of water here, but like almost like he had like a privileged experience of the war. Like he was lucky to have the experience that he had type of deal, which isn't really true. But when you know, when he's confronted with this man and he is just like, oh my gosh, I was trying to strike up a conversation in a friendly manner, and just like, whoa, man.
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know. He was trying to approach it as in, hey, we're all going home. This is kind of a cause for celebration. And that just wasn't the case, even for people who survived the war. You know, what were they going back to? And this small little, I don't know, 2-minute scene really made me think. I was like, damn, that one really cut deep for me. Holy shit.
Yeah. And then he speaks to him, and I guess, you know, the little Yiddish that Rosie knows, because we know that he is a Jew from Brooklyn, and he says, go with God. And the guy's just like, nah, like, we're past that.
If there is a God, he has forgotten me long ago. Yeah, so
that was holy crap.
Well, I'm sure for a lot of people who made it through the war, it made them, I don't know, maybe rethink their faith and stuff like that. Like, what the hell are we doing here? I don't know. This was just a very powerful, thought-provoking scene for me. So
I also like how when he's exploring the wreckage of the camp, and at the quote on the wall of like, he who judges in life will judge forever, or just around that type of message. I don't really know what I'm trying to say here, but I thought that was powerful too, to just read. I'm glad they gave us the translation, because I was like, if they don't give us the translation, I'm gonna be pissed right now. And then they did, and I was like, ooh, okay, that's powerful. Are you looking it up right now?
Yeah, I had it written down. It's the judge of life will judge for life.
Oh yeah, that's way better than I said.
Well, it's very succinct, you know, the correct translation. Very succinct, very powerful. Good.
Another one that just like hits you. I was like, oh, okay, wow.
Mm-hmm. And Rosie, once he gets to the airbase, the next scene we see him is at Thorpe Abbott. So why don't we just do this one throwaway Cross scene that, I mean, I guess they were kind of alluding to. He's getting more and more irritable, like being the only one left at Thorpe Abbott is getting to him. But it's just a scene where some new recruits are saying, yo, we're wheels up in 5 minutes and the equipment hut isn't unlocked. We can't get parachutes or whatever. Storms into the mess hall, smashes the guy's face into his breakfast, essentially, and just says, you're going to keep that up until wheels up plus 30 minutes. You're going to have it staffed, et cetera, et cetera. So Cross is getting irritable. I don't know. What were you thinking of that scene?
I'm just thinking of like character, let's say growth / development, just, you know, we're in the finale trying to think about where, how far we've come and things like that. And this was so, didn't feel like Cross at all, especially the Cross that we met.
Yeah.
In episodes like 1, 2, et cetera, type of deal. So, and I mean, hey, at this point, he has heard that everyone he's pretty much friends with that flies has gone down. So I think the parachutes themselves are quite a
a sticking point. You know, that's a sensitive issue.
That's true.
It's like, yo, yeah, bro, you can't send these guys up there without parachutes. Like,
yeah,
what if they, what if we can't get them back? And yeah, I think you're right. It just is showing the kind of heightened sense of tension. It was interesting, though, seeing those guys like kind of relaxing, because we've seen, we knew the one guy that stood up, and I've completely removed his name from my memory, but I don't know. I just,
oh, yeah.
seemed interesting, too, because we've seen him kind of from the start, and just the difference between how him and Kraz are in the moment.
Well, and the entire tone of this episode is the war is wrapping up. The Germans are more or less done and dusted. It's just a formality and inevitability almost. So I don't know. Maybe the tone around base when you're actually not in action is a little bit more laxed, you know, something like that. Okay, so that, I guess, just leads us into kind of Rosie getting back to Thorpe Abbott, and then we'll kind of pause on that storyline and go to the Stalag. But we already hit the one part of their conversation, but it starts with Kraz essentially saying, you know, sometimes I look in the mirror and I can't even recognize myself. You know, he does have the cheating. He has been through the horrors of war, what have you. And this is where Rosie just, like I was saying, you know, they had it coming, even if, you know, you still got to fight the monster. You can't let yourself be scared of turning into the monster. So this was a little bit cliched, but also reigns true.
I'm glad they included it. I think it's just a very interesting idea to get after. And they get after it, too, with I think, Buck and Bucky, and especially towards the end. And it's maybe less explicit than it is here, where Kraz is like, I'm changed. It might not be the same type of deal. And while towards the ending, you're kind of thinking it implicitly, like they're all going home and they're a little bit thoughtful of what's waiting for me on the other side type of deal. But I'm glad they like had a conversation about it. I'm sure there was a million of these conversations going on all around Europe and every base with all these guys thinking about, you know, what it's going to be like when I go home and how I've changed so much. So then I mean, we know too, I feel like generally for like a lot of people who has like had a grandfather that fought is always said like my, you know, he didn't really talk about it, all those types of things. So I thought it was just an interesting and important thing to include.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Kraz seems to be in a better mood now that his boy Rosie is back in base. So,
yeah, I mean, and him doubting himself to be a father was, I just like how they presented it too, because like, Rosie's pumped and he's like, yeah, man, it's great. And then he's slowly starting to realize, like, you good, Kraz? Like, what's up, man? And then Kraz is just like, oh, man, I'm a monster now.
Yeah. Unraveling a little bit. I mean, this is also, ever since you kind of harped on it, I'm noticing more how Rosie has kind of taken on that persona since the R&R episode, I guess, how he is just the calming presence, kind of like allowing his fellow soldiers to kind of break and have those moments where they drop the soldier act, I don't know, and be kind of just reinforcing instead of himself being the dedicated soldier. I don't know. It's just good character growth. And Rosie is just like that guy.
He's just the coolest guy.
Yeah, but at the end of the series, I think I gotta give it to Rosie over Buck, especially when they say in the epilogue, I guess, that he like, yeah, was interviewing Nazis in the Nuremberg trials, like including the head of the Luftwaffe.
He was literally training to go to the Pacific Theater. Almost everyone went home, and he was like, get me in a new plane. Like, what do you guys use over here? That's just crazy.
No, Rosie is that guy. So,
beast.
What a man. Let's see. So, that about catches us up in Thorpe Abbott until Buck and Bucky filter in. So why don't we rewind and tackle this Stalag storyline? So right when we are introduced to the storyline in this episode, we have 30 minutes until they have to be lined up to march. And as they're evacuating the camp, you know, they're hearing the Russian artillery in the distance. They know what's happening, but they also understand that they are going to have to endure this march. They say, you know, only take food that won't spoil. Our poor boy Hambone does not listen to the advice, so he spills his guts later on the walk. But we get a nice title card that says they are already 20 miles outside of the Stalag. And I just can't imagine, like, the wind is whipping their face. You know, it is like an unbearable just blizzard that is going on in clearly freezing temperatures. So I don't know.
Your feet. I can't imagine what it felt like.
Just all your extremities, really, at this point. I mean,
and it was something I noticed too, is that there wasn't a very equitable distribution of things like hats and scarves. Like I think it was almost Macon had just like a jacket on, no scarf, no hat, just raw dog in the elements. And then they just scanned by a guy next to him that had like a scarf and a hat. Yeah. And I was like, yo, bro, dude, give up that scarf for my man.
I don't know. You got to be looking out for number one, I guess. I was just thinking, like, thank God these guys were in the Air Force, because you remember it, like, they made a point to say, like, how wind resistant kind of their material had to be, obviously, because it gets freezing cold up there. So,
yeah. And the colonel, the guy that we've just kind of been referring to,
Bubs,
as the brass.
I know. I find his name's Bubs, but
he just literally had his fucking like bomber jacket on and his little cloth hat and was just like, he was just glaring at the elements. I think he was warming himself up that way.
That actor just has a face where he could be cast as any brass military, and I'd be like, that fits. That's our guy. That's our brass.
Yeah, he was good.
So the next title card is 48 miles outside of the Stalag. Clearly, they're just emphasizing they're walking through the night, walking a very far distance on just absolute starvation, etc. Even the German guards are starting to collapse, and we have our... the prisoner that they have already mentioned, Solomon, is Jewish. They're emphasizing this war is entering the end phases here. Everybody's kind of just looking out for one another, trying to survive.
Yeah. Almost the flip side of that, too, was that, like, correct. It's a complete powder keg, and that anything, these are desperate people, anything can happen. So, like, I thought that I couldn't tell that maybe, like, yeah, we're obviously watching closely and we do a podcast every episode, but like I think that they nailed that feeling where it was like they literally could just pop off and do anything.
Absolutely, they did. That you never really know when that switch might flip. I was going to say flip might switch. Whatever. So on their march, they get shuttled to the side of the road, and German infantry is going the other way, presumably retreating, and we have a very high energy prison guard given the Heil Hitlers, etc., etc., and there is just a defeated look on the faces of the infantrymen, and one of the guards notes, it's all just boys and old men, like we're truly finished. And
I liked that a lot.
My roommate was watching this part and he was just like, there is nothing better than seeing the Nazis defeated. Like in any media, it is just,
I thought
it just looks good. But which guy?
The guy who was like, oh God, we're truly screwed.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
They just were holding it on him for so long. And I was like, okay, this is going to happen right now. It did not. It was, I assume, a real thing, obviously, but just that being the thing that like really tipped him off, like, oh shit, we're screwed. Like that they're just literally anybody that has blood pumping through their veins is now in a uniform carrying a gun type of deal. It was just like, that's a dead giveaway.
I mean, this has got to be a real tone of the war. Like just being a soldier, knowing the war, you are not going to win. Like that. Just a look on their faces. They did a very good job of capturing kind of that end of the war feeling, I guess. I don't know. It was.
And then it's got to be weird of like, what are we even doing? Like, we're just.
Yeah.
Now, like, we're on this march too. Like, what the fuck is the point of us doing on this march? We don't really even have scarves.
And there's a couple times, like, at the very end when the Allies close in, like, the guards started to fight. But, like, when Bucky throws himself on the guard so that Buck can escape, getting a little ahead of myself, like Bubs our brass is able to just come up and demand like, no, let Bucky live. And it's like months ago, they would have just shot Bucky on sight, but even they are being keyed off to like, okay, maybe at this point it's better to just stay in their good graces for when this inevitably flips roles. You know what I mean?
Putting a good word for you.
Exactly. Or maybe it's just at a human level, like no more senseless violence. Really, at this point, it's like that would just be killing for murder's sake. I don't know.
Yeah.
The show. It makes me think.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It really does.
So after the walk and after they run into the German infantrymen, they make it to a forced labor camp where they at least have a roof over their heads. They can warm up by a fire and they get the news, the scuttlebutt, that there's going to be, they actually name drop scuttlebutt. There's going to be a train for them at dawn. Sure enough, they do take the train and they wind up at Nuremberg. And this is a cool scene where they're just being marched through the absolute decimation that has occurred in that city. And it's like, hey, that's what happened.
Yeah, it's almost unbelievable to like imagine the level of destruction. You know, like we've been to Germany, we've been to Berlin, we've been to Frankfurt, we've been to Munich, and you're there and it's just a city. You know, there's big buildings and everything, and obviously it was rebuilt. It's hard to like imagine the reality of being there in the moment with that much of the city leveled. I mean, it probably felt good, honestly, as the prisoners.
Well, to see the opponent is being surely taken care of, yes, but I don't know, even at a human level, they're starting to sympathize with the people around them. I don't know, none of this is 100% palatable for any of these soldiers, except maybe some flashes of like Bucky when he lets his emotions get the better of him. But at a human level, like most of these people just didn't want to see citizens getting slaughtered. Though I digress. So on the train, actually, I did kind of like it, this Buck and Bucky moment where they're kind of like, this sure didn't go the way we wanted it to, but would you do anything different? And I kind of liked it, was cheesy, but Buck saying, hey, I genuinely thought if there were two B-17s left in the sky that it would be you and me. A callback to the pilot episode. The bromance is still alive, but kind of just a nice reflection of what their part in the war was and how their story was written here.
Also felt like a nice wink-wink, like, this is a real story. You know, if it was like a fiction tale, maybe it would have been the two of them as the last guys left flying through the skies type of deal. So,
yeah. So they do get to Stalag 13 in Nuremberg, and this is where we meet the character George, who, it was really funny. He's a baseball fan. Who's your team? The Cubs. He says, better luck next year, and they would proceed to not win for another 100 years or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was the first thing
I thought of, too. That was so funny.
Oh, yeah. It was intentional, no doubt. Better luck next year. Come on.
Now, we hadn't seen George before, right, as a character?
I don't think so, no. Okay. I got the impression he was from back home.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought, too. I was just making sure. I thought so because when he says, like, Buck is kind of introducing him to Bucky, I assumed we had no idea who he was. But it was also like, okay, this is a little out of the blue casual.
Yeah, for sure.
He was
maybe.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. I just...
It worked out.
It did work out. Anyway, and there's another George, too. So we have Buck, Bucky, George, and George. And the four of them essentially agree there's going to be another march. And they say, hey, tonight's going to be the night. I think somewhere in there, there's a friendly P-51 that flies overhead when they're marching at night. And it's a friendly fire situation because they just think it's a convoy of Germans, when in reality, it is friendly POWs. But they say, yeah, we can try and escape tonight. Fast forward to tonight, everybody's kind of settling down. I think they're done marching for the night, and they just kind of try and scoot away over the wall. The Georges make it. Buck almost makes it until he is seen as Bucky is kind of slinking away, and this is where Bucky kind of throws himself on the guard and wrestles so that Buck and the Georges can escape. And again, this is just like months ago, Bucky would have been shot on sight for this sort of insubordination, whatever you want to call it, but for whatever reason, the guards are allowing it and let Bubs just say, hey, let him go.
Yeah, the P-51 friendly fire scene was pretty wild because you don't know. There's really no way for them to know type of deal. And I hope that those pilots didn't find out, you know, what really happened there. Hopefully they went on just assuming, like, you know, another little maneuver to let's say thin the German infantry numbers and it was successful in that sense, because that would be fucking awful if you're feeling like, oh, we're winning the war, we're kind of just harrying and harassing them back to Berlin, and then you find out, like, that would just be terrible.
Yeah, from a show standpoint, I actually am kind of glad that they addressed friendly fire and its place in the war. But yeah, holy crap, that is really unfortunate to think about, honestly, how many people probably lost their lives for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Buck and the Georgia, yeah, they're on the lam. So they encounter a German convoy, and then there is a very, when you saw the horse, the bloodied horse, were you thinking Game of Thrones?
100%.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was like, what is this scene right now?
Why? I didn't understand it then.
Beware the Pale Mare, something like that.
I guess. Yeah.
I didn't know what it was. Is it like a literary metaphor for something? I don't know.
It's not a good one. It's just, I mean, it fits the aesthetic, the theme, but I didn't exactly know.
It was odd too, because it felt like, I don't know, like, did that convoy abandon the horse? Is the horse just running away from a random bat? It was like almost the timing of it was too close to the convoy that drove by, where it was like, I don't know what it was trying to say.
I was also like, how many horses did they actively have fighting in the war at this point? Like, we didn't have cavalry charges or anything. We're past that. We got cars. It was very weird to me, but yeah. I was just thinking Game of Thrones. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe someone could explain that to us, but
yeah,
I don't know.
So that comes right before the scene where they're kind of taking a piss in the woods. I think Buck and George number two are taking a nap, and these young kids come up and jump George number one, stab him while he's taking a piss with a bayonet, and George loses his life for some damn kids. I don't know. And
for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And the buck scrapple. The buck grapple with the one kid who had him at gunpoint. And then this was also a powerful scene, if I'm being honest. And it made me just think of the unfortunate, all of this was wasteless or senseless violence, I guess. But this one in particular, just a kid killing a guy on the run. Yeah, I don't know.
Just desperate in their own sense, you know, propagandized and brainwashed to the gills. It's just fucking sad. It's terrible. George was a good guy, too.
George was a good guy, and we wish he made it out, but he is survived by Buck and George number two, who...
And the no bullets, too, was like, damn.
Yeah, the no bullets too, exactly. And
what's even the point of all this, man?
I will say, Buck does let both of the kids go, much like Bucky did previously, and I'm glad that didn't wind up coming back to bite him, but at this point, they don't have the resources to follow up on that sort of thing. I think that was emphasizing that kids are taking up arms.
Yeah.
And then to kind of follow out Buck and George, they are walking through a town or a village and they come across American troops. And again, it's a very like they're held at gunpoint, probably trigger happy soldiers, but they can convey that they are Americans and they are safe. Next time we see them is at Thorpe Abbott. But Bucky and the brass, Bucky and the brass, I started referring to them as, arrive at... Yeah, it does. But they arrive at Stalag 12 in Moosburg, Germany. And this is kind of just where we have the triumphant prison break scene where the Allies are advancing on this caged camp, compound, whatever. The P-51 is flying overhead. And I guess he was super confident that he wouldn't hit any POWs because he had to have known it was a POW camp. But...
got the job done, I guess. Yeah, this was awesome, though. This was just cool in the sense that, like, you could see the prisoners really get their fire back in them. You know, they've just been marching in the mud and in the snow and the rain and just, like, this opportunity getting and then just, like, jumping on it and, you know, like, just taking down all of the, I almost said the wardens, but, like, the guards and, the German soldiers. And I also thought it was interesting that they really weren't killing a lot of them. Obviously some people were killing the guards and things like that, but you know, they were just kind of taking them hostage and all that stuff. It just felt like very triumphant, obviously with the very triumphant scene of Bucky climbing the flagpole and placing up the American flag there. It was just like the perfect ending to that storyline. It was,
I think I read that did happen. Somebody changed the flag to an American flag during kind of the break, but there isn't a name attached directly. So they took a creative license and gave that honor to Bucky. But
that fits. Yeah, that fits. That guy, I mean, the guy did it in real life. What a fucking legend, dude. He must have felt crazy being up on there.
Goodness.
Everybody just cheering. Must have felt the best.
But I agree. I did think that it captured pretty well the abrupt escalation of chaos, you know, the prisoners turning on the guards, et cetera. And like you said, most of them weren't using lethal force at this point. People are surrendering and kind of honoring that. But
and interestingly enough, you say that, and I said that too. And we mentioned how there was this underlying tension of, you know, our German soldiers could snap at any point with that desperation and knowing all is lost. And I mean, some of those guys in those nests, those machine gun nests, were just opening fire on the prison.
That's very true. Yeah,
that did happen. And I was just like, fuck. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess I take that back, that people were honoring surrender. Some of the Germans were desperate at that point.
Yes.
But our prison has been liberated. Bucky is back. And I guess we might have a little bit to rewind on. So Buck gets back first. Graz tells him that, you know, they're not really doing bomb raids anymore this late in the war. But what they are doing is doing supply drops for the Dutch, who are currently starving. He goes over, you know, there's supposed to be a, quote, flak truce that the Germans have yet to honor. So it's still a little bit dangerous. But as we have covered, the Luftwaffe has been annihilated at this point. So they are pretty much flying unopposed, except for the occasional flak. Buck goes back to see his trunk, which Cross says, Bucky didn't let us send it back to your parents. You know, he said, my buddy's just MIA.
Which is funny because Bucky's also been gone for like 2 years at this point. Like,
they're so honoring both in their memory.
Which is just funny that that command stuck for that long.
And Rosie
Marge.
Picture of Marge, exactly. And Rosie asks him, hey, operations is looking for a pilot, and they are you good to fly? And he says, hey, it'll be good to get back into the saddle. And sure enough, we see Buck Levin in the cockpit once again. And I was just thinking, like, if there was a fantasy Masters of the Air, like, this plane that goes up is like locked in stud lineup.
Great. It was freaking so good. It was
Buck
so good.
Clevin next to Rosie.
This like, was straight up, like you said, fan service, where it's those two at the by the Kroz is back there. We've got Douglas on the back gun. We got Lemons is
dude,
taking
Ken
up,
Lemon.
Yeah, his first plane ride ever. And they're on like the best mission possible to just deliver aid to these people that need it. It was like, this is just amazing.
Total fan service, and I didn't even care. It was awesome. And this entire like last 15 minutes was very uplifting.
Yeah.
As we've said, they're delivering supplies in the Netherlands. The timestamp tells us it is May 1st, 1947, and they're going to Valkenburg, and they are kind of, okay, we're getting up to the flag, and then they have a cool shot from the German POV on the ground that they are just kind of watching them fly by and not using their artillery.
It's very casual, but I was like, they're pretty low for not knowing whether these guns are going to fire. Because at that range, that gun would absolutely destroy that plane.
Oh, they'd be cooked.
Yeah, this scene got me a little emotional though, with like the writing in the tulip fields, like the thanks Yanks and that stuff. Just like that, like collective level of like relief and like appreciation and love for like that. The, you know, everybody playing such a part in this struggle. It was just like really kind of hit me in like a watershed moment right there. And I was like, damn, this is like a really nice way to end this episode.
Ah, well said. I completely agree. This felt right. And it left the whole series on a positive note.
Kroz wanting to like hand drop the package down there and all that. Kind of like, it was all just kind of perfect.
The shots, I mean, I think they had them flying so low for the awesome shots that we got, just them flying over these Amsterdam buildings, the tulip field, circling around windmills. It just looked beautiful. But yes, many thanks, Yanks. They wrote in the tulip fields. And Buck asks on their way back for landing instructions, and with yet another heavy spoonful of fan service, he is responded to by none other than John Egan, our boy Bucky.
So perfect.
Yeah.
So perfect.
And then we get a Kroz narration for just about the last time. We made a few of those supply drops in the final days of the war, and then it was over. At first, it felt unreal, impossible, unimaginable. Then it felt inevitable. I had a wife to see, a son, a life to start. And that had to have been the feeling. I mean, your entire life is freaking uppercut for 4 years, 3 years, whatever it was. And then it's just done and you go back to normal life.
Yeah, I just couldn't help but think of like the packing up and cleaning process.
Yeah.
It's probably terrible, but the party was probably amazing. It probably was the best party ever when they got the announcement that they've officially surrendered.
Oh, that's the best party ever. Like, literally,
the best party I can think of.
There could be no better reason to celebrate than the conclusion of World War II, in my opinion. And
just awesome.
The boys are absolutely buzzing.
Yeah, they are. And we got to see some old faces too. Everybody's around. That was all really good too. And yeah, like I had mentioned earlier, just that exploration of this mindset of, yeah, you have this obvious level of exuberation that this struggle is over, but then it's like, who am I now?
Yeah.
After this experience. And this is not to cheapen at all the sacrifice and the hardship that they went through. But like the only thing I could think of for like my own life was like graduating and leaving college and it being like this like very influential, important chapter of my life is over. My life will never be like this again. And like leaving behind those people that they've obviously shared life and death experiences with. I don't think it was at that level with us at Penn State, but you know, you're leaving behind these people that were part of these transformative processes and moments in your life. And like I said, not to cheapen the experience of war and to compare it to, you know, the struggle of college, but that's just the only thing I could think of. And that again was like an emotional moment and just like really making you think. Like we said, this episode was really good at that and making you stop and consider.
I think that was well said, and I understood what you were saying about, with that comparison.
Yeah, it's trying to...
No, it's just kind of the closing of one chapter, like you said, and opening that next chapter and not knowing what it holds for you if you can kind of return to that previous normalcy. And no, this, like you said, this episode captured that feeling and everything that comes with it very well. And I think it did kind of a good landing into the conclusion of this war. You know, it left it on a very good note with, like we've said, a good amount of fan service. And our final sequence is Buck and Bucky sharing the cockpit, heading home one last time. And they discuss how they're leaving a lot of good men behind. And then the final Kroz narration, on occasion, the world must confront itself, not with what we are, but who we are. I was going home. I just wish more of us were.
Yeah.
That's our series.
Perfect way to end like the quote unquote scripted part of the series. Obviously, we had been asking for the slideshow type of deal we get at the end, but yeah, just like that recognition too of everything that happened and all the lives that were lost. I mean, they know what they're doing, Spielberg and Tom Hanks. So,
oh yeah,
it was perfect.
So that's going to be our series. What, just very briefly, in summation of the whole thing, how do you feel? Does it make you more or less wanting to go back and do Band of Brothers? And I don't know, what would you give it out of 10?
Okay. I feel like I'm very, like we've said throughout this podcast, this is a little bit out of the genre of type of show that we usually cover. And again, it's not like a show that was based on like, you know, crafting theories and predictions, and a lot of this stuff really happened. And these are very real emotions and, you know, things to discuss and tackle. And I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought that even just the watching the show portion was very enjoyable. I think talking about it every week with you was very enjoyable. Interacting with people that consumed the content was very enjoyable. I would say that I feel more compelled now to watch Band of Brothers than I did beforehand. And then to answer the last part, I would say this is like a solid 8.5, you know? And it probably, if just taken through the lens of like what this show could have been, it's probably like a 9, 9.5. Like, it's not perfect. Like we said, there's some slower things, but what I could have expected out of a historical, I don't even want to say reenactment, but it's not like a historical drama. It's just like, it was pretty much anything I could ask for, or everything rather I could have asked for.
I guess like a period piece, you could call it, but it kind of is a drama. Definitely some of the events were dramatized, that's if fair. You will. But I would agree. I gave it an 8 out of 10, but like no less than an 8 out of 10. And I'm trying to stay away from the decimal system. So I will call it a very solid 8 out of 10. And yeah, like you said, it's not what we usually do, but I'm fascinated by World War II. Whenever I'm presented with the media, I find myself going down rabbit holes. And when I hear something like the Norden bomb site, I Google it immediately. Yeah. And then that sends me down like 4 different links. And I'm looking up kind of like the bomber crews. I think this show did a very good job of kind of presenting something that I knew very, very little about. And that's kind of just life as a pilot in World War II, giving us kind of a personal lens with which to look at that life through. And it was just very well done, well acted. The production value was good. It really made you feel things. It was thought provoking. They were hitting all of kind of the nodes that I would want a World War II piece about this to hit. And I think my only complaint is that it kind of did get a little bit slow there, and maybe we could have gotten more action with the Tuskegee, who I still think got a little bit of a disservice here, that we were presented with them and then immediately they are POWs that are just kind of like there.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe Apple TV will feel compelled to give their story in a different series or something like that. But by no means does that detract from the series as a whole. It was very, very good. And I had a lot of fun covering it with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well said. The only other comment I'll make is just on like some of those final slideshow things. I loved that Jefferson and Macon both lived in Detroit and were public school teachers. That's just great that they found each other and were like friends and stuff.
Dude, all of our guys went on to do big things. I said to my roommate, could you imagine having 2 World War II Air Force guys as your science teachers, like in high school?
Yeah,
they would have been the coolest teachers ever. And I did love that for them.
Yeah. I was really glad that Macon went and got like a mathematics PhD. That was cool, because they showed us that scene of him doing all that before that, the one raid that they had. And that was just like, I'm so glad that that happened.
They were both smart dudes. Jefferson went on to found both the local and the national Tuskegee Airmen branches.
Yeah. I mean, he must have been, I didn't look it up and I should have, but he must have been one of the last World War II vets alive.
Said he was 100. He died in 2022, right?
Yeah, he only died like 2 years ago, less than that.
It's insane.
And wild.
I was happy to see a lot of them lived pretty long lives, except for Bucky, who died from a heart attack in the 60s. But he was working in the Pentagon, I believe it said at that point.
Yeah.
Buck,
it was like the Air Force. I don't want to say commander because I know that's wrong, but like in charge of,
say
a lot of the Pacific.
Head of operations in the Pacific for the Korean War.
Yeah. So he straightened himself out.
Well, maybe he was one of the things that was a little bit dramatized in this. We already talked about how Rosie went on to the Nuremberg trials. I thought it was hilarious that they slipped in, he met a woman and married her within 2 weeks. Yeah. That's just had a nice life for himself. Yeah. Prod's got a PhD in literature.
Yeah. I love too that little tidbit where him and his wife at Jean were always co-presidents of whatever PTA association of whatever school their kids are in. That was funny too. That was good. I'm trying to think of, and the Buck one was kind of tough because, I mean, March died young and so did Bucky.
They were married for 8 years.
Yeah. I mean, they
him
were both...
and Marge, and then she passed away. And I like that they said he had her picture on his bedside when he passed away 53 years after Marge had passed. So the love was still there.
But it, I mean, by what, 65? No, less than that, 62, 61. Like, both Bucky and Marge were gone. And that's tough, man.
Absolutely. That's but tough. True to what we saw, Bucky was his best man at the wedding. Yeah. So.
Good stuff.
They had a good couple years together, hopefully. And I'm glad they kind of ended it. As I recall, Band of Brothers was the same with just these little paragraph blurbs about what they did with the rest of their lives. And I was happy to see that a lot of our characters were up to some big things.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, I think that just about does it. Any late hitters from you, Kyle?
No. No, it was a good tour of duty.
It's been an absolute pleasure with you, my co-pilot.
Yep.
As always, if you like what you heard, give Binchtown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingeTownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, and for the last time covering Masters of the Air, we are Binchtown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.